All right, welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. This is episode 52. I'm Noah Rubin, your host, and this is a Fantasy Basketball International podcast. And for this episode, we are going to be talking about the Hornets, the Spurs, and the Raptors with Alex Reclean. So let's go ahead and get into it. Right, and quickly, before I bring Alex in, I just wanted to let you know that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkle berries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. We know every dude gets the heebie-jeebies when it's time for a close shave down under, especially when using the wrong tools. That's precisely why Manscaped is my go-to for those delicate spots. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free as a dove. As I said, we're going to be bringing in RotoWire's Alex Reclean, and we're going to be talking about a handful of crappy teams, not the teams that are playing right now, because we're recording this while the Heat are actually beating the Celtics, now that I'm looking up to see this. How does that make you feel?
Badly.
outside of you know, Boston currently losing to the Heat, how are you doing?
Doing well. You know, the kids are doing great, keeping me busy, keeping me occupied, and enjoying the slower pace of the off season. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this as like a fantasy analyst, but like not having to set lineups every day is kind of nice. I do like having the break of that. I'll start itching for it way before we get to October, but after several months of it, I kind of appreciate it.
Oh no, it's great. I don't know if we're not gonna say it, like waking up every morning and not having that be one of the things I have to check on my phone, where I'm having to try and use these great fantasy apps to set my lineups on my phone with all of their bugs. It's nice. It's relaxing, yep. And we can just enjoy basketball, which is fun.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about a handful of teams that are not playing any more basketball this season because they didn't play very well this year. So this is the second one of these recap series that I've done. So it's three more early lottery teams. We're going to start with the Hornets. Now, when I made this, I guess, schedule/lineup thing, it was before there had been any sort of tiebreaker to say between Charlotte and Portland. So Charlotte actually has technically the third worst record because of the tiebreaker that they did, even though they both finished 21-61. So Charlotte will have a 13.3% chance to pick first and a 50.3% chance to pick in the top four. If I'm not mistaken, they can pick no worse than seventh.
Yeah.
As I'm okay. So you got that right there. I was trying to pull it up, but cool. And then, so the projected picks are pick three, depending on how the lottery goes, and pick 42. They have a few franchise like key pieces, like, you know, that their core is LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller. They have some other talented pieces. Alex, what are kind of your overall thoughts on this Charlotte team?
I mean, everything's going to kind of depend on LaMelo Ball's health. You know, it looks like Brandon Miller has, if not star potential, then certainly, you know, number two on a play-in team potential. And he might be better than that. That might be seriously underselling him. But you know, you've got someone who, I think LaMelo's already been an all-star. You've got someone who has that talent to potentially be a top 10 fantasy player or even potentially better, but he can't stay healthy, and he shares a lot of DNA with his brother, who, you know, is, who knows if he'll ever play NBA basketball again, because he's had so much difficulties managing his knee. And when you're talking about the balls, you know, they have their own very unique path that they took to the NBA, but it's a pretty similar path. You know, LaMelo had like 2 years without Lonzo on his team with him, but you know, they had a very controlling, I don't know, you know, their father was heavily involved. And so they had the same practice routine. They shared DNA and practice schedule and expectations and, you know, day-to-day life. It is fair to assume for this pair more than almost any other pair that, like, the injury concerns for LaMelo are magnified based on what we've seen from his brother, even though, even with other brothers, that might be a kind of unfair thing to say. And when you're talking about the Hornets, it really all comes back to, is LaMelo an all-star, or is he 40 games a year at pretty good?
Yeah, and we've seen what he can do when he's on the court. Just looking at the per game numbers this year, he played 22 games, which is, you know, we'll call it a small sample size. 23rd in nine cap value last year, 36 games, 30th in nine cap value. The year before that, I think, is the glimmer of hope that everybody kind of looks to. He played 75 games and was 21st in nine cap value. So when he's on the court, you know, you're getting elite points, you're getting elite threes, elite assists, elite steals, pretty good rebounds for a guard. And then, you know, field goal percentage is bad, free throw percentage is good, turnovers bad. Pretty typical high volume guard stuff.
And in fairness to him, especially this year, and I think also last year, but definitely this year, he probably could have come back and, you know, at least gotten to 30, 35 games. Mm-hmm. But there was just no reason for the Hornets to do it at that point. But the way that they were talking about his injury and when he started allegedly doing contact practices, you would have expected to see at least another 7, if not another 10 plus games that they were tanking and they held him out. And I don't judge them for that. And 35 games is still bad, but it is. 22 or 23, whatever it was, is probably a little bit underselling it.
Yeah. And one thing, because I was talking with Matt Lawson when we were doing the episode earlier briefly about LaMelo, and he mentioned something that I wasn't aware of, that LaMelo talked about after, you know, 2 years ago when he had a lot of ankle injuries, wearing ankle braces. And apparently that's something he committed himself to and then ditched pretty quickly and then had more ankle injuries. I don't know, maybe you already knew that and I just wasn't aware, but I think that's something where if he wears ankle braces, that's not only, you know, this was a point that Matt made. It shows not only that he's going to, you know, it'll help him stay healthy, but it'll show maturity and, hey, like, I need to, if I'm going to be this franchise player, I need to, even if it's something as silly as I just need to wear ankle braces and show that I'm a leader in that way. I think that's, you know, a big step for him. As far as like how we view him in Dynasty, this is a guy that 2 years ago was probably going top three in Dynasty startups, at least top five. We are in the process of doing a slow industry Dynasty mock draft, and he went 14th. So he's a guy that, would you agree that if we knew he was going to be healthy, he would probably go earlier than 14? But the fact that it's been 2 years in a row now of multiple ankle injuries after also not playing a ton of games his rookie year, 51 isn't, or excuse me, that was the, so that was 51 of 72 games, I believe, that year instead of 82, still missed a handful. So is he this injury prone guy, or is he, you know, this star that is going to be that?
I think that he probably would have gone earlier than 14th, but I don't think he really should have, even if he was healthy. You know, it is hard to judge a player's ability and potential when they're so constantly playing hurt, because you're never getting the best out of him. And, but, you know, I think you just said it. LaMelo's been outside the top 15, outside the top 20, both of the last 2 years. You know, yes, that's going to be impacted by injury, but also the year that everyone was taking him, you know, around the first, second round, the 1-2 turn, that was in part due to projection and in part due to expecting mm-hmm. him to be better. He actually hasn't shown us enough to really warrant that. And so I would not be taking him. You know, I don't have off the top of my head a dynasty ranks. Mm-hmm. That's not something I have to do for my position, fortunately. But I would not have him inside my top 14, although I do think that most people would.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, yeah, that is interesting. So that's totally fine. And it's definitely valid with, you know, the issues that he does have with a handful of categories. Hopefully he's on the court enough that we can see that upside and what he can end up being. Because, I mean, he was a guy that was highly touted coming into the league as well. So, and Charlotte needs it if they're going to ever turn this thing around. They need LaMelo to be what they expected him to be. But their rookie this year, Brandon Miller, who when we did that or we're doing this mock draft, he went 38th. And a nice resource on hashtag basketball, they have Keeper, which is like a crowdsourced dynasty ranking. You can go in and vote right now. It's basically not like keep trade cut for football, but it's like you just choose which one you'd prefer, like between two players. Right now, I'm looking
up. Fun. It's a good way to kill some time. It's like a legitimately fun thing to do.
Yeah, and it has Brandon Miller at 31. And just looking through this, it tends to be, I think some of the younger guys get a little bit of a bump just because in Dynasty, of course, everybody loves the shiny new toy and whatever, whoever's younger.
But I'm actually a little surprised he's going that late.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, his, you know, 1.9 turnovers per game as a rookie on 26% usage. Like, this is a guy who's showing, despite what, you know, maturity was something that was a question mark in the pre-draft process. But like, at least on the court, it seems like he's kind of got it. Sorry, that's his past 2 months. I don't, what's his full season? His full season, the turnover rate the same, 1.8. You know, he's making good decisions on the floor. 18 points as a rookie. Especially when we're talking about young teams and young players, I tend to look much more at the later half of the season. I find it more instructive. So I do a little bit of both, but I'm like looking at his last 2 months, you know, 18 points, almost three threes, almost five rebounds per game as a 21-year-old rookie. Like, I'm legitimately surprised that people had the restraint to wait until 38 for him, especially given the way the dynasty community loves to reach for young players. I actually probably would bump him up a little bit for that. I'm guessing.
Yeah. I have no issues with that. I really like him. Like I liked him coming into the league and it was just kind of overshadowed by my love for Scoot Henderson. But as like watching him this year, like the little things that you see pop up. I know there was the one game where I don't even know what game it was. There was like a specific play that was trending on Twitter for a little bit, where it was like they gave up a fast break and he's like yelling at all the veterans, like, get back. Yeah. And it's like that's just, he's trying to shift a culture in Charlotte that has been a losing culture. And so it's like, okay, like I like that. Then I went to when they played Orlando, just one of the last few games of the season where I don't think he missed in the first half. He ended up finishing with 32 points on, I think, like 11 of 13 shooting, scored most of that in the first half against Orlando. And I was like, okay, like, He's really freaking good. So
yeah.
And Orlando's defense with no LaMelo. So it's like him and Miles Bridges were kind of the focus of Orlando's defense. So it was impressive.
Yeah. So I think Brandon Miller, you know, that's talking dynasty. You know, when we're talking about redraft, I'm still probably only going to have him around like 100 or so. I'm not going to get too excited for next year. But if he's going 38th in an analyst mock, I'm going to tell you that I think he's a dynasty buy.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And I, you know, my boy Mark Williams is sitting there on the screen. I love Mark Williams.
We can talk about him then. We get, because I mean, he's more fun to talk about than the other guy. But obviously, okay. So I guess the main thing with Mark Williams is we know that he's pretty, like, he's good with the traditional center stats. You know, the rebounds will be good, yeah. The blocks will be good, the field goal percentage. Does the back concern you? I mean, like, is it more? Do you think it was Charlotte stinks, they wanted to lose, they're horrible about communicating injuries to everyone, so is it just kind of Charlotte being Charlotte and he's gonna be good to go next year, or is it something that, you know, concerns you?
I think it should concern us a little bit, but you know, his ADP isn't gonna go, he's not gonna be super high in standard. He's not going to, or in redraft, he's not going to be super high in dynasty. So I don't think it's not like the cost is that high for him. And yeah, sometimes back injuries linger and sometimes they're a problem. And the timing, the way in which, you know, once we got to February and they were like, all right, we're just going to like, say we're finally going to switch to month to month after, you know, like 2 months of going day to day and then week to week. The timing of continuing this really short time frame of we're going to give you another update in a week, we're going to give you another update in a week, that was early in the season before they were like fully committed to the tank. And if any of the back stuff is going to concern me, it's that. But we're not talking about like a, you know, he's not some behemoth. He's not, you know, Mitchell Robinson sized. He's not Joel Embiid sized. He's a much skinnier guy. And you hope that sort of helps him, you know, just be lower impact. And yeah, I mean, it's cause for concern, but I don't want to over-index on that because there's so much upside. You know, a steal and a block per game is pretty good. And and he can easily do that. And if healthy, should be able to do better than that.
Yeah, I mean, the averages for this past season, 12.7 points, 9.7 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 1.1 blocks, 26.8 minutes per game. So I guess you could see him being a guy that could get up to 30 minutes per game. And then I'd say pretty realistically, without even considering that, yeah, it could be significantly better than this. It's like 15, 16 points, 10, 11 rebounds, a block and a half a steal. Like those are pretty realistic numbers for him to hit.
Definitely.
And he was 60th in 9-cat this year. So the 9-cat value, I think, is going to look really good for him. Do you think, I mean, he may just not be this type of player, but is there anything outside of those traditional center stats that he can add to his game to make himself any better? Or do you think it's just going to be, hey, there's these four stats that he's really good at?
Well, if for the people who are listening and not watching, I made a face. I think he's probably just going to be limited to,
which is fair,
the traditional center stats. You know, every now and again, you see a guy sort of add a decent amount of passing. But I don't know that we've really seen anything in his game that implies that that's coming. It's not like Kevin Love when he was young, where like he had the incredible outlet passing ability. It was just a question of how much they were going to incorporate that. You know, we haven't seen something like that from Mark Williams. We've seen no indication that he's going to add threes. If anything, coming in as a 21-year-old rookie and already shooting 70%+ from free throw, I could see him getting that. I could see it staying the same very easily, yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if he got that closer to the sort of 78% that's break even. And he's one of the highest impact field goal percentage players because he's so good there, that if he were neutral from the free throw line, that would be a meaningful boost to his value. I think if anything is going to improve, it would probably be that. And even that, you know, that's 50-50 at best. But 15 points, 11 rebounds,
yeah,
1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks, if he can do that, and I think you and I both think he can, that's pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. I'm hoping he can get there. The free throw percentage was probably the one thing where I'm like, yeah, that is a realistic thing. And honestly, like you mentioned, just being above 70%, there's so many centers that are really good shot blockers, really good rebounders, really good field goal percentage, and just are abysmal from the free throw line and don't take a ton, I guess, which helps. Like, he only took 3.4 this past season per game. Yeah. And, you know, that's not going to it could maybe swing something, but it's not tremendously not like damaging
in your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll see anything from, you know, their trade acquirees, Mann and Micić?
I think it's Micić.
Yeah, Micić, I think. Do you think they have any long-term value? I'm still a little intrigued by Micić, but the coaching staff seems so hesitant to play him. I'm a little afraid of what happens if they add any depth and if LaMelo is playing, if he gets buried again, even though I do kind of like him as a player.
Yeah, I think I remember a lot of people being really excited about Trey Mann getting the opportunity after the trade, and I was excited for him to get the opportunity. But to me, it was like, this isn't somebody to look at in Dynasty because LaMelo Ball is going to come back and bam, yeah, Trey Mann's out of the rotation. It just kind of depends on how they feel about him versus Micić. And I think they could both be solid, like backups, like rotation pieces, and you know, be able to contribute. Like Trey Mann, you know, can create his own shot. He can play make a little. The steals are really good. Micić is a good playmaker. So having that off the bench, I think, is valuable when LaMelo can't be on the floor. I don't see a ton of upside with either of them just because there is guys in front of them.
What do you think about like TJ McConnell as sort of a comparison point for Micić in terms of, like, you know, a backup who, when the starter gets hurt, he can step in, get a bunch of assists, do something decent, stick around for, I mean, Micić was playing overseas for a while, so McConnell's only 2 years older. But what do you think about that as like a potential comp for what he could be? Because I agree. I don't think either of them, man, or I don't think either of them have a ton of long-term value unless you're in a pretty deep league. But if you're in a pretty deep league, you might be pretty happy about having had McConnell on your team for the last few years. Can Micić do something like that? Is he something like that? What do you think about that one?
I think he could be like a McConnell light. Like, I don't know if he's quite like, nobody's going to be TJ McConnell the way he is, the way that TJ McConnell is TJ McConnell, but coming in and giving you a lot of it. I mean, he had a nice stretch late March, early April, where he went 12 assists, 8 assists, 13 assists, 9, 10, with some decent steals sprinkled in. I don't hate it from like a fantasy perspective. Like, if you kind of know based on what we've seen, hey, LaMelo might miss some games.
Right.
If they slide in Micić. Yeah, no, I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, it'll depend on what the roster around him looks like, but I could see Micić sticking on the roster, this roster or another roster, and filling a role sort of like that. I'd have to pull up Spotrac. I don't know what the Hornets bench salary contract figures are. Sorry.
Yeah, you're supposed to know that off the top of your head.
My bad. anyone else on this team? I mean, Grant Williams, I was kind of disappointed by this season. He was okay once he got to Charlotte, but I honestly was hoping for more from him this year. Do you have any Grant Williams thoughts?
I think it was basically silly season in Charlotte for most of the year, where a lot of these guys are not going to be like, I think Grant Williams is an excellent eighth man, seventh man, maybe on like a good team. Like, I think he is a really good NBA player. I don't think he's a guy that's going to contribute a ton in fantasy. And he was given the chance to start, so he was able to put up some numbers. But I think realistically, he's not a starting NBA player on a really good team. Like, got the chance in Charlotte because they were basically tanking the moment Mark Williams and LaMelo went down.
Yeah. Trying to see what we got here for Micic's salary going forward. Micic has, he's on the books for next year. And I always forget what Red is. Red is a team option, right? Club option, yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
So they can keep him for 2 years at a pretty affordable salary. That's not bad.
No, no. That could work out for them just to have like a depth piece.
Man is on the books for the same. No, Man is club option this coming season and then off the and then restricted free agent.
But I'd imagine that they would keep him around. I mean, at least for the team option.
Oh, for this year, yeah. For $3 million this year, I would assume they do.
Yeah. definitely. But I guess the last guy, and then we can quickly hit on some draft prospects. Miles Bridges, just on court stuff. Always want to just clarify that. He went 72nd in our dynasty mock. I think the biggest question here is, does he re-sign with Charlotte? Like, do you have thoughts on that? Because I've heard people say that they think that he's going to re-sign. Where I just think that he stayed in Charlotte, like to decline trades at the deadline to keep his numbers up so that he could get more money elsewhere. Or do you think that he sticks in Charlotte?
I think it really kind of depends. I think a lot of it depends on the sort of, it depends on how much a team is willing to, you know, take that PR hit. And I assume, and this can be wrong very easily, but I assume that the Hornets have already taken the PR hit of bringing Miles Bridges back. Whereas another team, it's a whole brand new PR hit that they would have to take in addition to paying him. And so I assume as a result that the Hornets are just going to be willing to pay him more. And so I would assume he would be back just because, like, you know, the pure, like, the market of it, if I have to take that PR hit, then I am not going to want to spend as much if that's a part of it. Like, oh, I have to spend this much as well as deal with all these headlines.
Yeah.
And like, are we sure there aren't more coming? You know, the timeline. So I would assume he goes back to Charlotte just because of that. You know, the better you are, the more teams are willing to look the other way. We learn this in the NFL all the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Miles Bridges is good enough for, like, Philly's one of the teams with a lot of cap space, and Bridges is good, but I don't know that that's a big media market. You know, I don't know that Philly wants that kind of attention. Philly, Chicago, Boston, LA, New York. If I'm those teams, I've got so many press looking for an angle all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to bring that in. But then again,
he might not want to deal with that either. Cause Charlotte is a small market, and the reporters there, I'm not trying to attack anybody's jobs, but like, it's a smaller market. So happens is less attention is dropped onto it.
And I mean, do they have more than two beat writers? Like, I'm not aware of as many.
One or two off the top of my head. Yeah.
I can't think of five. I can think of five for the Pistons. I can think of five for even some, you know, for the Raptors, I can think of a bunch for a lot of these. Even, well, the Raptors, Toronto is a huge city, but
I can think of a bunch for the Thunder.
Yeah, exactly. And the Thunder is a small city. That's a good comp. I can't think of that many beat reporters, and the less beat reporters, the more like they can if you only have two beat reporters, then one gets a good story from LaMelo, one gets a good story from Miller, and they don't need to go digging.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're trying to make a name for yourself in Philly, you know, and the guys who've got the connections are the ones who Embiid and Maxey are going to go to, you go dig. If I'm Philly, I don't want that headache. And you're right. If I'm Miles Bridges, I might not want that headache either, but money talks and he is a good player. So I don't know for sure.
Yeah. So let's say he does re-sign in Charlotte. Looking at his numbers from this year in comparison to 2 years ago when he had last played, very similar numbers, a slight uptick in points, threes, rebounds, assists were slightly down, steals, blocks, pretty much the same. The main difference was the field goal percentage dropped about 3 points, which I think was pretty much the main factor that had him drop from 31st in 9-cat to 57th in 9-cat. When this team is fully healthy, because I mean, in reality, like there hasn't been a ton of time with both. Actually, I guess 2 years ago was the last time we had both LaMelo and Miles Bridges like healthy. So healthy and available. When Miles Bridges, Brandon Miller, LaMelo Ball, and this new lottery pick are all sharing the court together, like what is the fantasy upside for Miles Bridges the same that it has been? Is he a guy that can get nearly top 50 value, or is he more like a top 75, top 80 guy?
I think it's probably top 50, top 60. Okay. More, you know, I'm there are not a lot of, you know, you do much more draft work than I do, but everyone is saying that, you know, there just isn't the same kind of star power at the top. And so assuming the Hornets don't get the number one or two pick, which like, you know, to combined 26% chance of getting the one or two pick, like more likely they don't have that. And even the one or two pick might not really make that kind of immediate splash. So I don't see that as necessarily being a huge hit. And we saw him play pretty well when he was with, LaMelo. If, you know, LaMelo is such a good, you know, table setter for him that you could at least make a case that LaMelo healthy helps him. So sometimes like a star coming back can hurt. I'm not mm-hmm. sure in this case that's going to happen. I don't think there's any free agent that's going to rock the Hornets world. you know, I think probably more like 60 than 50 for me, but I expect, you know, and I'm always going to drop him a few ranks just because I don't want to root for him. But my take is fantasy should be fun. If you don't want to root for a guy, don't draft him. He's probably going to be right around 60 for me if I had to guess.
Yeah, no, I think that is fair. Like, the field goal percentage dropping was kind of, I think, the main factor, and having LaMelo out on the court, getting him easier looks and just taking up some of the defense attention. I think, yeah, that will help. Even if some of the other numbers drop off a little, I don't think it's going to drop off so much that it, you know, demoralizes his fantasy value. So I think borderline top 50 is pretty realistic. He's 26. I mean,
and we'll see what happens this summer. It's worth noting when Micić started getting more minutes, Miles Bridges' field goal percentage started going up. Better point guard play. I like
him. There we go. he should be the guy in Charlotte. So a few guys that could look at in the draft. Honestly, the guys I have listed are all wing players because you have Mark Williams down low. You have LaMelo. I'd say LaMelo and Brandon Miller are the two just guaranteed these guys are part of the future. Mark Williams and Miles Bridges are probably that next tier. So maybe you look to get a fifth starter. I think and I'm probably going to end up saying this for like literally every team, but Reed Sheppard is probably one of my favorite fits, is having him as a guy that doesn't need the ball a ton, that can be effective as a floor spacer, can do stuff with the ball in his hands, but doesn't need it. A good defender. I think he fits in well alongside what they want to do. Zachary, I think it's Risache, and then Matas Buzelis. I probably butchered both of those.
I think he got the first one right.
Okay.
I think
that's cool, because I think I got it wrong earlier and then Matt said it right. And I was like, shoot, I need to work on that. So I hope I'm getting better, because I always tend to butcher names.
Notice I didn't even try, but
that's fair. Yeah. That one was good. So those are two guys. I think Risache has kind of slipped a little bit. So yeah. Charlotte may pick early enough. They don't end up taking him. A couple other guys in the wing that'll probably go a little later than what Charlotte will pick is Cody Williams, Dalton Connect, and Ron Holland. Honestly, I just want them to draft somebody on the wing that I think will be able to be a day one starter. And then they have their potential starting five for the next few years that can grow together, hopefully stay healthy, and maybe get Charlotte back to the play-in tournament, which is where they like to be. But
yeah. Is Leaky Black ever going to be a thing?
I mean, I think he's shown some flashes at times. I want to say there was at least once or twice this year where I either saw a tweet or something about him. Maybe honestly, it was like looking quickly at his numbers. Maybe it was just the last game that he ended up doing okay. He's a guy, I guess, that you can probably stash, but you don't have to. I don't know. I don't really see any upside there.
I don't. You got to be in a pretty deep league to be worried about him. But he's a name that I'm somewhat in. He's just one of those names that's sort of on my radar when we're thinking about the Hornets. But
he is one of the NBA players of all time.
He is.
We'll move on to the Spurs, who
a good team. Finish,
I mean, not their record, but I think next year they'll be playing right now. That would be my semi-bold prediction. 22-60 this year, fifth worst record in the league, 10.5% chance at the first pick, 42.1% chance to pick in the top four. So they have their pick, which is projected to go to be fifth right now, 35, 46. And then they have Toronto's pick, which is top six protected. So, which is exactly where Toronto's projected to be, is six. But if one team jumps them, boom, the Spurs have potentially, picks six and seven or five and seven, or if they jump up even more, which would be pretty insane to be able to add two top eight players to what they already have. I mean, obviously Victor Wembanyama is the face of not just the Spurs. He's the face of dynasty leagues. He's the face of fantasy basketball, and probably within a couple of years, the face of the NBA. Do you think that the Spurs are going to get back to the playoffs like by next season, or do you think this is more of a 2 or 3 year thing?
I would assume. I mean, the splits with Wembanyama, especially the second half of the year, his on-off numbers are so good. As his minutes start, sorry, I'm trying to pull up my Spurs page. As his minutes increase, as the surrounding cast around him increases, I don't see how they're outside at least the play-in race. You know, I mean, the West, the West is competitive, and
so deep.
Being in the play-in race doesn't necessarily guarantee you a postseason game, but I've got to assume that they are heavily in that mix this coming season. I don't know there are a lot of people hated the Jeremy Sochan point guard experience. I get that. I actually love that they tried it, and I don't really have a problem with them taking it slow this year and not really trying to win games, which they kind of weren't. And I think that we've seen if Jeremy Sochan is what the Spurs hope that he can be, then he's the kind of player for whom we've seen these experiments where they get a year at point guard unexpectedly. We've seen that sort of pay off in terms of their improved decision-making long-term and their improved vision long-term. Yeah, it didn't work. And if your goal is to win, maybe they should have gotten away from it sooner, but their goal wasn't to win. And we know Wemby's going to be a star. You know, giving Sochan that opportunity, because he is a very good player. He is, you know what, he's probably the third staple of this roster long-term. And that's assuming Vassell is a long-term piece and not, you know, a good player now who they'll include as a trade package in a year or two. Like Sochan might be the second anchor at the moment. So I don't mind that experiment, but they're not going to do that again. They're not going to waste 20 games with Trey Jones playing 20 minutes and Sochan starting at point guard. So yeah, I think they're easily in the 45 wins plus next year.
Yeah, especially if they make a move for a point guard. Like, I mean, there's already been rumors of Chris Paul or Trey Young. I don't think Trey or DeJounte will end up happening, even if it would be nice for the Hawks to trade one of them and get their freaking picks back from getting just destroyed in the DeJounte Murray trade.
Yeah.
But we'll end up talking about most of the guys, or I guess all the guys we just talked about. But first, Victor Wembanyama, who went first in our Dynasty mock draft, unsurprisingly, as he should. This is, I guess, more of a fun question. Are you in the camp that Victor Wembanyama should be like banned in fantasy basketball?
No, but I would not be surprised to see something like a third round reversal become more standard because he is so good. But he's already very good. He might be absolutely incredible. Maybe he really will be cheating in 2 years. We'll see. But no, you can't just rule him out.
I've seen it. Like that's what I was curious. I've seen people suggesting, and I don't think I've seen analysts suggesting it. Or maybe I have. I don't think I have, though. But I think it's more like people on Reddit or Twitter randomly throwing it out. I just didn't know if, like, you thought that maybe that should be a thing.
I mean, he's probably going to be ADP number one this coming summer. And mm-hmm. and I do have him number one on my board. But I think that Jokic is much closer than he's going to get credit for still. I think that if you wanted to take Nikola Jokic number one this year, that's still totally fine. And so, you know, maybe we'll get there where Wemby is cheating, but we're not there yet.
Not yet, but it could vary. I mean, looking at some of the numbers, just absolutely absurd. I mean, just quickly the last 2 months, which I think this may end up, you know what, I'm going to actually do this very specifically. To try and get it the final, we'll say just post All-Star break numbers for Wemby.
The last seven games are where it really gets silly.
So post All-Star break, 23.5 points, 12 rebounds, 5.3 assists, 1.5 steals, 4.5 blocks, 2.3 threes, 45.7% shooting, 76.9% from the line, 4 turnovers. So those three categories aren't great. But he was a rookie, so I'm assuming the free throws may bump up a little bit. The field goal percentage, he's 7'4" or 7'5". That's going to get better. The turnovers, I would assume, would go down once they get a franchise point guard, whether that be through the draft or through a trade. But yeah, the last handful of games, he had 34-12, 5-1-2, and 5-3s. He had a 33-18-6. He had a 40-27 game, like a couple of 7-block and 9-block games, like,
yeah,
but unreal.
The last seven games, or maybe eight games, whatever it was, are truly absurd. And I mean, even if you go back through the last 2 months, the post All-Star break. You know, he blocked more shots than I think I went through and it was anyone in the last 10 years. If you look at just the post All-Star break numbers, or maybe even you actually, no, that was the 2024 numbers. Since once you hit New Year's to now, I mean, the numbers are absurd. He's fun. I hope he stays healthy, because man, this dude is fun.
Yeah, he is. And honestly, I feel like it's even, there isn't a ton to talk about other than just like talking about how good he is. So I'm actually going to ask this question from like a strategy perspective, whether it's dynasty, because I think it applies more for redraft leagues. Is there a chance that you, like, if you don't get Wemby, that you just straight up say, okay, I'm just going to punt blocks because I'm not going to get the guy that's going to block five shots per game? Like, is that something you would consider, or do you still think that's like, oh, I can be strong in that category with, you know, these few players, but Wemby basically counts for two really good shot blockers?
Yeah, I think you should not do that. Okay. I think that it depends a little bit on whether you're head to head or you are roto. Mm-hmm. But if you're roto, being second in blocks, still yeah. really helpful. And if you're head to head, being middle of the pack can still get you a bunch of wins. So no, I'm not going to just punt because I missed out on Wemby. I might punt because with Wemby off the board, I went for Jokic or SGA or right. Doncic and, you know, punting blocks that way. But I'm not going to be punting blocks because of the lack of, Victor.
Yeah. And that was just something that popped in my head. That wasn't something that yeah. I had like no, a full thought that I had formed. I just was like, I'm just going
to, it's the off season. It's time for those thought experiments.
Right, man. This is off topic. I'm looking in Miami's up 12. I guess now it's 8, but wow.
Oh, are you ahead of me or behind me? It's 7 where I am.
Okay. I think Tatum's about to probably hit a free throw then. Spoiler. All right. Devin Vassell, who went 47th in our dynasty mock. Post All-Star break numbers, 21.1 points, 4.3 rebounds, 5.2 assists, 1.1 steals, 2.3 threes, 48.7% from the floor. His field goal percentage was finally good this year after 3 years of it being pretty bad, which I think was a big step for him. Just has a really good fantasy game just because he pretty much helps across the board. I know he briefly kind of alluded to it a little bit with them potentially, you know, is he a guy they look to trade in a year or two? I was going to ask, do you think he is okay? Like, they have Victor Wembanyama and then Devin Vassell is the number two guy, or do you think he's a third, maybe even fourth option, or just a guy that they package in a trade to bring in a second or third star next to Wemby?
I think it's just too soon to tell. But I've never been as high on Vassell as some of his more enthusiastic backers. His salary the next couple of years is actually pretty, pretty good. His salary is stable year to year. It's not increasing, which is really good for the Spurs, because as a percentage of salary cap, therefore his numbers are, his salary is going down over time. So that's actually super helpful. And that is an indication that maybe they view him as a potential long-term partner. I'm just not sure. I don't see him as a number two. I don't think he is or has the potential to be good enough to be the number two next to Wemby on a deep playoff team. He's on track to be good enough to be a number three. But I'm just always attentive to these players like him who are good and have trade value. He's on a long-term attractive contract. He scores. you know, maybe predicting the Michael Carter Williams trade a few years ago got me cocky on predicting these, but I just, you know, the good players on a bad team sometimes make for a good trade candidate. So I'm just not convinced he's a long-term piece, but I'm not convinced the alternative either. I could see it going either way with him. He's good. I don't see potential for him to be an all-star. I personally don't see that. He's 23. He's still got years to improve, but I just don't quite see that.
Did not expect to have Michael Carter Williams get mentioned on honestly any podcast I ever did ever again, but here we are. I think third option is pretty realistic, but the trade package, I think, like, that's another realistic path, honestly, as a Hawks fan. I mentioned wanting to trade Trey or DeJounte to get back picks. My ideal trade scenario, and this is probably one that fans of 29 teams would laugh at me for, but Trey Young for Devin Vassell and the Hawks picks back is something that I would pretty easily do, just because, one, like, getting those picks back is crucial so they can actually, like, tank if they want to, and then also having Vassell as an upside, actually good defensive wing.
As much as I think the Spurs should target DeJounte or Trey, I do think that's a good idea. I don't know that I love that deal for them, but
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, most people are going to say that's crazy, except for people that are probably, like, Hawks fans are going to say, oh, that sounds great, we'll do that. Even though people tend to latch on to superstars and say, I don't want to trade them no matter the price. But to me, it's like, at some point the price is right. Like, you have to move off of the guy that, you know, just kind of crap the bed in the play.
I'm looking at the salary band right now of, like, the other players who are in Vassell's. He's making 29 next year, then 2 years at 27, then 1 year at 24, then back to 27. I mean, you've got Sabonis at 30,000. I think that, so you could, you know, that's obviously a huge upgrade, and if you're the Spurs, you should do that. I don't think the Kings would. But other than Sabonis at 30,000, Jalen Brunson, the Knicks would never trade. And no. Vassell, if he might not be the third best player in this band, but he's probably got the third most trade value because of his age and how good he already is.
So, would you say that number two would be Sohan?
Sohan's cheaper. I'm talking about the salary band, like, league wide players in the,
I gotcha,
roughly $27 million per year.
Gotcha. You're not talking about trade value on the Spurs. I see.
No. Vassell has more trade value than Sohan.
Yeah.
And he should.
Well, DeJounte cap it this year is 25. So that's not far off. 27 next year. There we go. Match made in heaven. Send DeJounte home. Or not home, but, you know, back to the Spurs.
Are the Hawks sending more more picks?
Oh, gosh. No. All right, let's move on. Jeremy Sohan. goodness. No, the Hawks can't sell off any more players for cheap because they did that with literally everybody. So, but Jeremy Sohan went 97th in our Dynasty mock. You mentioned point Sohan. That was something I was going to bring up, was that they're not going to do that anymore, but that did do a lot for his growth, I think, as a player, because I think he had some playmaking upside, but it was more of like hey, he's a good playmaker from a forward spot, than hey, this guy should run point guard. I think that, but they knew that. So
yeah.
What kind of fantasy upside does he have? Because he is a guy that will have some big games from time to time, and then you'll also look the next game and he'll have like 2 points and not anything else. So the fantasy is great at times, and then sometimes the fantasy numbers are atrocious. Do you think that this, one, that he can be more consistent, and two, that how much upside does he have in fantasy?
He's 20 years old. He has played literally all five positions. he was considered a raw prospect on draft day, and he, you know, is already a borderline rosterable player. He was just inside the top 150 over the last 2 months. What was he over the full season? A little bit worse than that, actually, over the whole season. So when the Point Sohan experiment ended, his value actually increased as he was playing a more natural position. He's 20 years old. He is, in my opinion, a highly valuable dynasty piece. I got a little over my skis supporting him in redraft this offseason. In redraft, he should be a late round pick. He should not be going inside the top 10 rounds. He should not be going inside the top 120. But he is, I gotta say it again. He's 20 years old.
Yeah.
And he came in as a raw prospect. This dude is a NBA player. The overlap between fantasy ability and NBA ability isn't perfect, but generally speaking, as people get better at real basketball, they get better at fantasy, and he is going to get a lot better at real basketball. I got to assume, even if his game doesn't cater perfectly to fantasy, even if he is a better in real life than fantasy guy, that his value is going to go up, and he will have several years at worst inside the top 100, if not much better than that.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly that he's going to be really good. It is just entirely dependent on how much that translates into fantasy basketball, but pretty well-rounded numbers, I'd say, that he's shown. So like, how much better can he get at each individual thing is going to determine how good he is at fantasy. But last guy on the Spurs to really talk about, I mean, they have some other guys that I guess have some upside, but Keldon Johnson, I think, has been a pretty consistent starter. And then the second half of this past season became more of a sixth man. Is there any fantasy upside? Because I just got him at pick 182 in our dynasty mock, and I think he should be higher than that. But at the same time, like, he's not really doing anything outside of scoring and hitting threes. So not great for fantasy. And now he's in a sixth man role. Like, do you see any upside there?
Not a ton. He's going to show up in my waiver wire column a lot throughout the rest of his career. And that'll be, and I think that'll be many years. I think he's a solid NBA scorer, and when he's hot, add him, and when he's not, drop him. But I think that his days as a fixture on your roster are past, if they ever happened at all.
Yeah. A couple guys they could look at in the draft. I think point guard is kind of the number one thing they need to look at. If they have one, potentially two top eight-ish picks, Nikola Topic is a guy they could look at. And I think he's one of the top point guard prospects that people are looking at. Reed Sheppard on the wing, I think, as a secondary playmaker. I know I mentioned I'm going to say him for every team, and I think I'm probably going to say him again for Toronto. Rob Dillingham, just having, a guy that is a scoring / passing playmaking point guard. And then Stephon Castle is another guy that I mentioned, even if he isn't as much of a shooter, neither is Topic, really good defender there. It would be fun to see Castle guarding, guards and then forcing them into Wemby to have him reject any shots that get past Castle. So a number of interesting guys, but I think it's, in my opinion, it's pretty easy. This should be a guard for San Antonio.
I think if they end up getting, if a couple people jump and they end up getting that Raptors pick closer to 10, I wouldn't mind seeing them take one of these Giants either. Edie or Klingon, like,
yeah,
I know Wemby's doing great when he plays center, but having somebody when you're playing Jonas Valanciunas, when you're playing
For sure.
Vucevic, just to take some of that load off just for some amount of time, give them some flexibility. You know, I don't think most people are projecting Klingon or Edie to be 25 minute per game guys. So if you get them and you just have this bruiser who can eat up some minutes and some abuse, I would love to see that. I think you're right that if they, that my understanding, you do more, much more draft for it than I do, but my understanding is, you know, 5, 6, 7 is too early for either of those guys. But if they, if the Raptors, that pick falls, my understanding is that's a decent range for one or the other of those. And I wouldn't mind seeing that. Also, just the one other guy that we didn't mention at all, Malachi Branham. If you're in a really deep dynasty league, he's cheap. He's still young. And he's got some potential long-term to bubble up as a sixth man on a good team, depending on how his career pans out. You got to be in a deeper dynasty league to be worrying about my Malachi Branham, but the people who are in those deep down leagues, they're some of the people finding you. So
he's definitely a guy to roster. How much or whether or not he pans out, we'll see. Definitely a guy to roster. As far as the bigs, that concept of having just like a bruiser to eat up minutes against some of the like really big centers, it's something that like the guys at No Ceilings and they do their draft content, love consuming that. They mentioned Klingon as a guy that for like the Thunder to target with their, I think they, so they're supposed to have Houston's pick, which is currently projected 12th. So I think, honestly, a lot of mocks have had Klingon as high as like top 5 even, but like kind of like that between 5 and 10 range. Whereas Edie, I've seen going anywhere from early second to like almost the lottery, just kind of depends. I think he is more of a late first guy to me, but he definitely does fit something that the Spurs could use. Like that is definitely a role, because is Zach Collins the guy to do that? I mean, like it works, like it's a little bit, but having one of those guys would definitely
fit. About injury prone. Yeah. But also, you know, I just was victim of this 10 seconds ago, but it's important to point out that if we are talking about a draft that no one is all that excited for, that more than any other year is the year for teams to follow what they need and their evaluation.
For sure.
And you know, we, the fan community, we, the analyst community, we see these mocks and we sort of like hone in on like, oh, you know, taking him at 4 is too high, but taking him at 7 is okay. I guarantee you that that is just not the thinking. Like I just said it, I was guilty of it 10 seconds ago, but I guarantee you that the front office in OKC and in San Antonio would laugh at that idea that there is that big of a difference between 4 and 7 and 12 in any year, but especially in a year like this.
Yeah, definitely going to be looking to fill some roles, like because there will be guys that end up being really good. Like I no doubt about that.
Of course, there always are.
But there's no like locks. There's no Victor Wembanyama, Scoot Henderson, Paolo Banchero, Chet Holmgren. You can go back every year, of course. None of those necessarily locks in this draft. So it's, you know, we'll get your, go fill a void, go fill a role.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll take a page out of Minnesota's book and just draft 2 point guards in the top 5 or top 7, I guess. And then end up having Steph Curry go the next pick, which I'm sure.
I mean, not to bring up Michael Cardio Williams twice in the same podcast, but the last time there was a draft that people talked about like this, and the draft that this one gets referred to, 2013, you know, Oladipo was an all-star before his knee fell apart. CJ McCollum, it was in that draft. Giannis famously was in that draft. You know, Dennis Schroeder's still kicking around. Steven Adams, Kelly Olynyk. There are good players in this draft.
Yeah.
Gobert, I always forget that he was in the same draft as Giannis. There are some good players in this draft. They just didn't all go at the top and people didn't know what to expect. And I think that that, if you're using that as a guide, you know, that's a good guide.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see exactly how that all pans out. Cause then you also have years like the next year where you have Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker as, you know, oh, these are, you know, LeBron and Carmelo just coming back into the NBA, and then neither of them really work out the way they're supposed to. And then you have Jokic go in the second round. So the draft, as always, is just, it's a, it ends up being a lot of fun to look back on.
I'm a Jabari Parker for life. You know, that dude, if speaking of knees fell apart, he was good before his health fell apart.
He was
really good. His career looks a lot different if he doesn't get so injured those first 2 years. I'm standing by people. Anyone who was pro Jabari Parker back in the summer of 2014, I salute you. I don't think you got it wrong.
So Michael Carter Williams and Jabari Parker are going to be the focus of this podcast. I did not expect that. We'll move on to our third team, Toronto, who I think is a little bit better than their record suggests. They obviously made some trades midseason, had some injuries. 25 and 57, they have a 9% chance to pick first, 37.2% chance to pick in the top four. Of course, their pick is top six protected. It's going to go to the Spurs if it falls outside of that, but they still will have pick 17 and an early second and pick 31. Their key pieces right now, I mean, they have some other like good players that are going to keep around, the Acapulco, Gary Trent Jr., but the main guys, Scotty Barnes, RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, and then Grady Dick, who they just drafted in the first round. I guess, how do you feel about what Toronto is right now, or like what they could be within the next few years based on, I guess, what they have in front of them?
I mean, I'm kind of confused. I don't really understand why they weren't better this year. Like, I mean,
they didn't want to be.
Yeah, I guess. But like, I don't know.
They did free fall at the end.
But, I mean, they weren't particularly good when they made the Quickley trade. You know, what were they doing with Grady Dick? Why was he on the bench for so long? I have so much more confusion than I do anything else. And I mean, maybe it's as simple as just like the personalities were not working, and you know, Siakam needed out, and it just wasn't working with, you know, as much. He was a champion with them, and like that, I'm sure they'll throw him a nice retirement ceremony, but maybe it was that simple. I was so confused by their whole season. I'm going to be confused by them still. The only thing I understand for sure is that Jontay Porter is not playing anymore.
That's true. It's funny, actually, I was just looking back. So obviously they lost Fred VanVleet in the offseason. So Dennis Schroeder was starting at point guard to open the year. But their first starting lineup was Dennis Schroeder, OG Anunoby, Scotty Barnes, Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl, and then the guys playing big minutes off the bench, Gary Trent Jr., Precious Chua, Malachi Flynn, Pistons legend now. They beat Minnesota in their first
point year. Pistons legend. They beat Minnesota in the opener. I forgot about that.
Yeah, 97-94. It was the really weird game that Kat shot 8 of 25 and Anthony Edwards shot 8 of 27. Just really weird game. But they started off their season like that and then ended up kind of being average. Like, they were in contention for a play-in spot. They were fighting with the Nets and Hawks there for a little bit, and then all of a sudden free fell, which made sense. They were able to end up getting down to six, so they will keep their pick if they don't slip at all, which good for them. How do you feel about Scotty Barnes? I mean, he's coming off averaging, I think, career highs across the board. I think the only thing, he had one category that wasn't a career high. I want to say it was like field goal percentage was better as a rookie, but everything else was career highs across the board. How much better do you think he can get? Because he was 21st in 9 cap value this year, but pretty much every category, I think he can make at least a small improvement on and just end up being a top 10 guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I, I try to resist the urge to say like, what category can this player improve in? I think that,
yeah,
that, you know, you're more likely to fall into a trap doing that than you are to really hit home. But you asked a broader question, which is,
yeah,
you know, is there any of these categories that he couldn't improve in? And blocks is probably like 1.5 blocks per game. If that's not his career high, it's probably going to be close to it. He is too important as an offensive hub, and blocks are too hard to get, especially if you are not a center. But I do think he could be in the 1.3 to 1.5 range a few more years. Like that wouldn't surprise me. And everything else, points, rebounds, assists, steals, threes, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, I wouldn't be surprised to see any of those, any or many of those improve. He definitely, you know, came in one of the youngest players. He's still only 22. I think he'll be 23 by the start of the next season. But he absolutely, I'm not sure. I'd be a little surprised if he ever made it into the first round conversation, but I could see him pretty easily having, you know, a sort of Jimmy Butler-esque, spends a lot of years in that 12 to 16 range of ADP. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I guess now that you mention it like that, just back to the Mark Williams thing where I asked, is there any like category you think that he could add to? I wasn't, just to clarify, I wasn't insinuating he's going to go, oh, let me go work on my assists this summer. Like, obviously I didn't mean it like that, because I think with like the traditional centers, they tend to only impact a few categories. So even if the 9 cap value looks good, how much, I guess the impact isn't quite as much as the 9 cap value would suggest, but I think that is offset a little bit by, you know, maybe an improvement in free throw percentage, or, hey, is this player a good enough passer to add an assist per game or something like that? So not that he was actually going to just quote unquote, go work on his assist this summer,
no,
to add that to his game. We can move on to RJ Barrett, who went 104th in our dynasty mock. He had a few solid stretches from the free throw line, but it's pretty bad. And then after the trade, I think it even kind of dipped a little bit more, but the field goal percentage was better. So after he got traded to Toronto, he averaged 21.8 points, 6.4 rebounds, 4.1 assists, 1.5 threes. And he shot 55.1% from the floor, 39.2% from three, and 62.9% from the free throw line. So as pretty much just a guy that's been, okay, he's a points league guy, or if you need points in category leagues, he can help you there. But the 9 cap value has been pretty atrocious just because he doesn't do much outside of score. Do you think he does hold more value based on what we saw? Because it's also been inefficient scoring. Do you think he holds more value based on what we saw after the trade?
Well, he's never going to come close to 55% from field goal line, which is what he averaged as a Raptor. He's never going to come close to that in the rest of his career. You know, never be definitive when predicting the future, unless you're predicting that RJ Barrett will never hit 55% from the field again. It's just not going to happen. But I'm a bit impressed by what he showed as a Raptor. He showed increased playmaking ability a little bit. You know, his category league value will always be handicapped by how poor his defense is. But, you know, if he can maintain 6.4 rebounds, 4.1 assists, that actually there's a place for that on fantasy rosters. It's not an early draft pick, but there is a place for that. I'm not a huge RJ Barrett fan, but I, no. I do think that he should probably be drafted in like 14 team leagues.
I have no issue spending a late round pick on him. Yeah. I mean, what if he does shoot 55%?
His percentages are so weird for this, for as a Raptor. His free throw percentage had been over 70% since his rookie year, 83% last year, and then it plummets to 62%. That's wild. Yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know, there are times late in draft where you're chasing points, and the most important thing that RJ Barrett showed in this run late in the season is that, like, he'll have a long enough NBA career and he'll have a role enough that you can target him if you need to supplement your points. Especially if these assists can stay up, then you can add points without really sacrificing too much. He's a weird player. player.
The other guy that came over in the trade was Emmanuel Quickley, who people tend to be a little bit higher on for fantasy. He went 54th in our dynasty mock. 18.6 points, 4.8 rebounds, 6.8 assists, 0.9 steals, 2.8 threes. After the trade, he also shot 42.2% from the floor, 39.5% from three, 84.1% from the free throw line. We just saw his college teammate Tyrese Maxey win Most Improved Player when he got thrust into a starting point guard role. I mean, you're shaking your head. I agree he shouldn't have won it, but he just won the award, and he did have a really good season. But yes, it should have been Kobe White, and it should have been Jalen Johnson if he played 65 games. Yep. How good can Emmanuel – like, I don't think he's as good as Tyrese Maxey, but they're both, like, shifty guards that can shoot and are incredibly fast. Could he be some like Tyrese Maxey light, where he's just kind of everything?
They're also physically they remind me of each other. They're both very pointy. Like, their body is just very pointy. I always describe Rondo as pointy, and Quickley and Maxey are very pointy bodies.
I've never heard that adjective to describe them. That's interesting.
I've always associated those three players in my head. I like Quickley. I don't, you know, what he averaged. I think that the most instructive thing for him is his numbers as a Raptor. Look at his, you know, just ignore everything that happened as a Knick. And focus on the 19-5-7. And I think that as he moves forward, he will probably get better, but his usage rate will go down a little bit, and his minutes may drop a little bit. 33.3, you know, that's a second, third, fourth best player on a team, and he's probably more like fourth or fifth best player on a team. But I think he's a pretty solid player, and I think that given his age, that's kind of late for him to have gone 54th. Never mind. I thought for some reason I thought you said 74th.
Oh yeah, not 54th.
Yeah, that's probably fair spot for him in a dynasty league. He has upside. I could be underselling it. I'm more likely to be underselling it than overselling it. He's a pretty good player, unless or until the Raptors get a better point guard, he should have some runway. I like him. I definitely think, you know, he was inside the top 40 as a Raptor. I'm probably not going to have him quite that high, but I'm definitely going to have him in my top 50 for next year.
Yeah. Just to reference hashtag basketball's keeper, the crowdsourced dynasty rankings, Emmanuel Quickie is 57th on that. So
yeah,
seems to be about where people want to get him. So I mean, we'll see. I'm assuming he's going to start again next year. Hopefully he continues to just be the guy. I mean, if he's getting minutes, it'll be fun to see what that looks like with potentially a top six pick. And then
where does hashtag have Gary Trent?
Let's see. 191.
Oof. This is Gary Trent erasure, by the way, not even including him in your graphic.
I tried to do just top four, but no, I like Gary Trent. I just wanted to make sure to highlight the rookie that they just drafted in the first round. That's why I included Grady Dick, because I also didn't include Jakob Poeltl, and I don't like Jakob Poeltl. But
Gary Trent is 25. He's got playoff experience. He's a good player. I don't know. I want him to get out of Toronto.
He's played in the playoff. That's your argument for him being good.
How many other players on this Raptors team? I guess a few of them are still around from when they were good, but I don't know. I guess a lot of them have played in the playoffs. Never mind. But I like Gary Trent. I think he's good. I wish that the Raptors believed in him as much as I do. You know, he was top 60 second half of the year. When you give him some minutes, he can play. You probably shouldn't be playing him 32 minutes a game like he was down the stretch, but you also shouldn't be playing him like the 20 minutes a game that it was for the first couple of months. There's a sweet spot in the middle there.
Definitely. Was he a guy that was on your waiver wire column pretty frequently or no?
All the time. Okay, especially the second half of the year.
He was on our pickups of the day pretty frequently as well. So that's funny.
Yeah. I once Grayson Allen, finally the cutoff that CBS asked for is 67%. And once Grayson Allen passed 67%, Gary Trent was the one who was just like, am I really writing about this guy again?
How did you celebrate when Grayson Allen got past 67%?
We threw a parade.
That was definitely a guy that needed to be rostered a lot more than he was. But wrapping up with Grady Dick, 139th he went in our dynasty mock. Over the final 2 weeks of the season, he averaged 15.3 points and 3 threes, shot 37.5% from beyond the arc. Is he a guy that's going to do anything in fantasy outside of score points and hit threes? Like, is he a guy that can do a little bit of other things, or is it just that? And maybe if he's good enough at that, he plays enough to get you a handful of rebounds and assists and maybe a steal, and hey, he's a rosterable fantasy player.
Yeah. My optimism in him has gone down based on how the Raptors used him. You know, it looks a little bit like one of those situations where you get him in the building, you're like, oh no, did we make a mistake? Because I don't understand his usage, especially early in the season. But then when they finally started playing him, he played all right. And they gave him a bunch of starts. He probably profiles as similar to Gary Trent, someone who you're playing him when he's hot and you're not playing him when he's hot. You're playing him when he's getting minutes and you're not when he's not. He's very much a three specialist streaming type. I'm a little surprised he went so late in Dynasty, just given his age and being a lottery pick, but also not that surprised because the Raptors told us they weren't super interested. I just don't understand why. I just don't understand what they were doing with him. Why do you draft him and then start the season? But like, October, four games. He only, or November, December, he played four games.
Yeah.
January, he played 7 games. What are you doing? Why are you sitting him so frequently?
It was weird. I just
don't get it.
I'm looking at this, the Dynasty mock, because it is still going on. It's been very slow, but Gary Trent went 204.
Yeah, I mean,
so he went outside the top 200.
I would take Gary Trent before Grady Dick, because even though the Raptors are more invested in Grady Dick than Gary Trent, Gary Trent has shown that he can do this for several years on multiple teams. And so, especially if you're in a deeper dynasty league, he's the type of player who, you know, he's never going to be the reason you win, but he's going to be startable for the next 5 years.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that idea, because he has shown enough to be like, I think 204 is late. He was a guy I was considering with my last pick. I think I ended up just going upside, but I think he should be drafted earlier than that. My last rankings were after the trade deadline. I had him 174, I believe, but he's shown enough that, yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. And then Grady Dick is not a guarantee. Like, they drafted him early. Like, we have to assume he has a little bit of upside at least, but there's also a chance that, hey, he hasn't shown much more than a few flashes. Maybe it just doesn't pan out.
And like, so I'm a little concerned by the fact that, you know, in his 17 starts, he only shot 32% from three on a good volume. Isn't that what he's supposed to be here for?
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you got a player like Aaron Nesmith who gets drafted because he's a 3-point shooter, and it takes a few years and it takes a change of scenery. And then you finally start to see that thing that was his pre-draft reputation. So it's too early to rule Grady Dick out, but there are some red flags.
Definitely. And just looking at who they could potentially get with the 6th pick, I have on my list Donovan Klingon, who is, you know, they have Jakob Poeltl, but having another center option, especially after losing Jontay Porter, just losing out on a front court guy right there. Reed Sheppard, I know I mentioned I'm going to have him for every team. Literally, I think he just fits really well because of he doesn't need the ball a ton, plays good defense, spaces the floor, and could immediately start. I think a starting lineup of Quickly, Reed Sheppard, RJ Barrett, Scotty Barnes, Jakob Poeltl, like, that's pretty decent, has some upside. Stephon Castle, he's a guy that's really growing on me. I think he still has fantasy like upside, but I think he's more of like a player I'm more excited about in real life. I just think he's another guy that can fit pretty well anywhere, even if the shot isn't great, but having him as like a defender, I think, is a really great option. So
I wouldn't be surprised, just like based on what I'm hearing, I wouldn't be surprised to see Castle jump up a bit and go like second or third. This draft is so open, and people seem to be pretty excited about him. No one's really slamming him. You're high on Reed Sheppard. A lot of people are, but Reed Sheppard's got his detractors. Klingon, you know, some people are high. He's got their detractors. I haven't really seen many people who are down on Castle.
I think the shot has been bad, and I think that's like something that a lot of people have mentioned. Like, hey, it's concerning. It doesn't look bad. He could get better at that, but he's a really, really good defender. And just as a freshman, now granted, it's a UConn team that just won the year before, but helped guide them to a national championship. So, like, that I think speaks volumes for a freshman to do that. So, I like him a lot. I have him third behind Saar and Reed Sheppard. So we'll see what ends up happening.
Before we close, I just want to continue my campaign of never Kelly Olynyk. While we're talking about the Raptors, don't draft him now. Don't draft him next year. Don't draft him tomorrow. Don't draft him yesterday. Never Kelly Olynyk. Don't do it.
This is coming from a guy that had to have written at least 7 waiver wired columns, but like about Kelly Olynyk.
No, I don't.
You don't include him?
I won't do it.
even when he was like tearing it up and starting, you know,
I think I wrote about him. I think I wrote about him once this year, and the whole paragraph. I'll try to find it after and send it to you. The whole paragraph was just me complaining about having to include Kelly Olynyk in this piece. I think I put him last, and I was like, "This stinks."
That's great. Well, we'll wrap up as the Heat just pulled off the upset win over the Celtics, which still blows my mind that even happened. But I know that it is now the off season. Do you have any content coming up that we should be looking out for?
I got one piece I'm working on, but there is absolutely no timeline for production. So I'll finish it when I finish it, probably after the semester ends. I got about 2 weeks to finish all my grading. So it'll be sometime after that. So, you know, thanks for the opportunity, but I got nothing to share right now. Go listen to Noah's stuff.
Well, thank you. But you can also give Alex a follow at Reclean on Twitter.
Yep.
And you can follow me on Twitter at NoRubin22. Like and subscribe to Fantasy Basketball International. But that's
going to use, do it. I'm trying to use Blueski more. Blue Sky. Same hat. So, if you're on Blue Sky.
If you're one of the exclusive people that got an invite code to participate in Blue Sky.
It's open now. Free sign up. Yeah.
Okay. We'll see. Join. Maybe that'll stick around a little threads. All right, but that'll do it for this episode of the Tingulator Podcast. Alex, thank you for joining me, and everyone, thank you for listening.
Thanks, Brad.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.